All right. What episode is this? I can't even keep track. It's episode 37. Welcome to Alphabet Scoop. This is episode 37, and this is CES week, CES 2019. I've been saying CES 2018 all week, but that's definitely not right. It's CES 2019, and as you can see in the title of the podcast, I kind of am calling it the Google Assistant Convention because that's pretty much what it is. It's like, I don't know, like half the booths that you walk by have the Google Assistant logo trying to lure you in to see what it is that they are, you know, shipping that actually integrates with the Assistant or Android TV or, you know, like I just see Google logos everywhere, Google brands everywhere because, you know, it probably brings people in and rightfully so. And so I guess we'll just talk about a little bit this week about all the different crazy Google Assistant / Wear OS / Android things that we're seeing on the show floor and in top floor suites at the various hotels. So what do we want to start with? I guess we can start with, actually, you know what, let's start with Google proper. Maybe Abner, you can start us off with this. What did Google proper announce this week that's notable that we could talk about?
So the first thing on Monday, I believe, Google provided us an update on usage stats, which is something they only do like twice a year. So since I/O 2018 in May, Google Assistant is now available on 1 billion devices versus 500 million. But as everybody's pointing out, the majority of that is due to phones and its availability on iOS and that kind of thing versus pure smart home devices, with Amazon last week saying it has 100 million dedicated smart home devices. The favor is still in Amazon with more brands, more individual devices, that kind of thing. But it has seen as how Assistant is taking over the show and everybody is just touting that they have integration. It's a fair battle at this point.
Yeah, for sure. But as you know, there not many phones have Alexa. Well, I mean, there's the Alexa app, but you know, in terms of built-in Alexa support, it's not really a thing on phones. It might be more so if the Fire Phone ever did anything. But yeah, so phones aren't really part of the Alexa numbers there. But it's probably what do you think? Is 75% of that number that Google's touting is probably phones?
I think it's less. I think I don't think Google has 100 million smart home devices yet.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I don't think so either. It seems like they're... I think that me personally, I kind of am maybe misinterpreting things or I'm not seeing the full picture because sometimes it feels to me like Google's like crazy winning. And then I just realized the foothold that Alexa had before Google kind of entered the ring, and they still do just have such a big foothold. And there's so much Alexa stuff that, or another thing, the trend that I'm seeing this year is that a lot of devices are doing both. And it's kind of like either or. I mean, in one example, went and looked at Vuzix Blade, and they have Alexa on it, and then later is coming with Google Assistant. And then the Focals by North AR glasses, it's like it's shipping with Alexa now, and Google Assistant might come later. They haven't rolled that out. So you know, it's I don't know. The war continues, right?
Yeah.
What else did Google announce?
So a day later, they announced a lot of news. So let's start off with phones, actually. Google Assistant is adding features like automatic flight check-ins, hotel bookings by voice, and lock screen access, which I know many people might not like the fact that Google is getting rid of voice match to unlock your phone directly. In the past, you could saying anything to Google would basically just unlock your phone as if you enter your password. But now, like on the Pixel 3, you can only have access to Assistant and personalized results. You don't get past the white Assistant interface anymore. And I think for some people, they'll be quite annoyed at that restriction that faces.
Is there anything that they announced relating to specifically smart home devices and perhaps the Google Home Hub that we should know about?
It was a bit light on news, actually. The biggest thing that the smart
thing I'm thinking about is the translation thing.
I don't think that's as big as a deal anymore. It seemed exciting and futuristic, but honestly, to me, it seems like more of a like commercial sell. Google is making the Home Hub an interesting proposition for like hotels and concierge services, but practically speaking, I don't think people inside their homes need a translation service compared to like when it's on headphones, which is available on all headphones and phones now. It makes sense, but I don't think in the context of the home that this is the biggest feature. I'm not sure about you guys.
I mean, I could see that for sure because, you know, it's probably rare that you're going to need, you know, or you'll be having bilingual interpretations within your own home. So yeah, that's a good point. But it's a notable feature, and it kind of builds on what Google was showing off with the Pixel Buds when they announced them a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. I guess another thing on, you know, first party Google proper stuff is that Google has a booth this year. For those that don't know, it's a really, really big booth, as we were talking about kind of before the show started. And the big deal, and we just got off it, Ben and I just got off the ride at the Google booth, and it's like a roller coaster, right? What do you think about it, Ben? Tell us about it. By the way, this is Ben's first appearance on Alphabet Scoop, so welcome to the show. We're glad to have you.
The roller coaster it's like a Disney ride, but Google.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. It's really interesting.
It's pretty cool, and they go all in on being self-aware. It's kind of, and it's an advertising opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like they're going over the top a little bit on that, but it's kind of fun. It's like a dark ride. I mean, those that are kind of aware of the lingo in you know, theme parks and stuff, it's what you would consider a dark ride. It's kind of very slow. You know, it's not like a roller coaster, but it is on rails, and it tells a little bit of a story. I think the story kind of opens up with this like father or something that needs to remember to do something when his wife's out of town or something. And then you get on the roller coaster and it tells the whole story about all this stuff. And it ends with this birthday party for the grandma. And we have a video going up actually later this week, but the grandma has been kind of the buzz, I guess, right? Like it's like this grandma that's like talking to you while you're in line for the ride. And it's hilarious. I don't know how they're doing it. Is it someone that's behind the scenes watching it on a camera and they're talking in live time to,
I would assume so. I didn't see I saw a camera like up on the ceiling, but it was way too far away for them to be getting an accurate view. So I don't know where the camera was, but that's what it seems like.
Yeah, my first impression was that maybe this was powered by the Google Assistant, and it was just like some few, you know, like it's like the Google Assistant 2 years from now or something, and this is like an early limited prototype demo or something like that. That when I first saw people interacting with it, that's what I thought it was. I thought it was like you know, like a very specifically engineered version of Google Assistant that was just like replying to people in live time. And it would be funny if they came out and said that was what it was, but
you would love to do that.
And then you asked it if it was the Google Assistant, and it asked if you were. If that's the Google Assistant and it has sarcasm, that's amazing.
Yeah, I asked it. I was like, "Are you the Google Assistant?" And she was like, "Are you the Google Assistant?"
Could it be actual people? Like, they do have the duplex call center now. Or was it, are you sure it was automated?
No, I'm 100% sure that it was not automated. Yeah. Well, actually, I'm like 99% sure that it was not automated, but I'm just like leaving that 1% possibility for Google to have just tricked us with. I mean, they've done some really real sounding AI stuff, and so I wouldn't put it past them to use something silly like that to demo some crazy tech that hasn't been unveiled yet. For those that don't know, what I'm describing is this animatronic grandma that is in the line for a Google dark ride And all of this is just so surreal to talk about, considering, you know, we had no idea that this multi-million dollar like structure was going to involve a ride or any of the stuff that we're talking about. If you're unfamiliar with what we're talking about, just stay tuned for a couple of days and you'll see all of this on video. I think Ben had his Pixel and his Moment lenses out and he was capturing the whole thing as we were going through. So, and now we also got photos, so we'll show you that. Another interesting thing on that is that Google's giving away a Google Home Hub to every single person that rides the ride for free. So, and Ben, you get a code and you get to order it on the Google Store. So you get
Hey, that is super useful.
Yeah, so Ben already has two Google Home Hubs, right?
And, yep.
And so you're giving one of them to our Kyle Bradshaw, right? Or you're going to give the code off to someone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're just overloaded on Home Hubs. But other than that, enough. Yes, you can. I guess not. The Google Home Hub demos at the October 9th event definitely showed how the Google Home Hub could be used in your kitchen and in your living room and in your bathroom or whatever. So the possibilities are endless. So what else is interesting at the booth that you thought? Any thoughts on the booth, Ben? I mean, you're the only person here besides me that saw it in person.
Yeah, I mean, running through, I'm going to go through it a little bit more tomorrow, but really the... you know, it's a lot like last year where they have the setup with the car so you can see Android Auto and they have the wall of Google Assistant products. I thought it was cool this year that they have a whole section that's just made by Google products. But I mean, aside from the ride, it's just a lot bigger version of what they had last year.
Yeah, for sure. I actually didn't get to see last year's because it got rained out and I had to fly out early. But yeah, thankfully there's no rain. And Google's multi-million dollar structure didn't get destroyed by the water. That's kind of the Google stuff for the week. I mean, in terms of what Google itself is doing, what you have a thought on that, Abner?
There's like sort of a crossover with Lenovo and the smart clock that Lenovo announced. Ben, when you used it, did you get any idea? During your briefing, so did you get any idea how much work Google put into creating this new form factor?
So as far as I could tell, they were working directly with Lenovo on this for the entire development period. It's still based on Android Things, just like a normal smart display, but the entire UI was redesigned by the same team for this form factor. And it's a great UI. It's got some proactive notifications, which is nice. And it scales down for the smaller form factor really well.
About the hardware front, it was very interesting to me that they also used cloth in a direct styling of the Home Hub. I'm very curious about the design discussions there between the two things.
They didn't mention anything about that, and I didn't think to ask about it, but the fabric, it's a different feeling than the home devices. Like, it's not, like, the home devices are kind of like a rough fabric. This was more of a soft fabric, if that makes any sense at all.
Definitely it does.
Is it closer to Google Home Hub? Like, where is Google Home Hub on the spectrum in terms of fabric?
The Home Hub, from what I remember, feels like a Home Mini.
Yeah, kind of.
This, I don't know. This feels like, to the touch, it kind of feels like a normal, like a, I don't want to say like a blanket material, maybe.
Interesting. Well, one of the unfortunate things about, I mean, let's talk about feature differences. So like this, our first impression with the small Lenovo display was that it was going to be potentially running the same OS or the same version of the smart display or Android Things smart display operating system that we've seen already that was announced at last year's CES and shown off on the JBL and the Lenovo smart displays. Talk about what are the differences that you've seen between the two and what makes the smaller size like unique compared to what we already saw.
So the UI is honestly, it's 100% different. Like there's, you still get the same UI for like changing the volume and,
like the control strip.
Yeah. No, actually there's no control strip along the bottom from what I saw. This is very early software, so it might not be done yet. But so when you're on the main screen, there's no photos. It's just a clock, and you can change which clock face it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a bunch of different options, and they're pretty cool. But as you're on that main screen, if you swipe to one side, you get the alarm clock, you get the weather, and then you'll get a few other things like the commute and all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, you can just ask OK Google for it. And that's actually a completely different interface, too. It's full screen instead of just coming down from the top.
Mm-hmm.
And then... And then if you swipe back... And then the swipe back is just as usual.
Is it a better interface in a smart displays, do you think? Because the swiping thing is interesting. Like the quick access to alarms...
I think it's better. It's better for its use case, which is the bedroom. Mm-hmm. Like, I would not say this is a better interface for the kitchen or anywhere else, mm-hmm. but for the bedroom, it's absolutely perfect. Like, everything they've done with it is exactly how I'd want it to be, except for the photos thing, which they said they told me with the photos that they don't want to do the photo frame like the Google Home Hub does just because of the size, because like not every photo is going to look good on that small screen. Basically they said like they would consider adding it if they can work with Google to like have it automatically filter based on what would look good.
Mm. Yeah, because smaller photos with you know, like maybe subjects that are farther away or something like that is going to look exactly. kind of rough because, you know, those be very, very pixelated on that tiny thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they said they were trying to avoid.
That's an interesting idea because, you know, Google's already doing with Google Photos, they could easily design something that looks for, I don't know, photos with very large clear subjects that are not that far away or whatever. Mm-hmm. They could definitely use AI to do that. So that'd be, I don't know, interesting to see if they end up doing that. Mm-hmm. It's probably not that far off from actually happening.
Mm-hmm. They sounded like they wanted to.
Yeah.
Mm. And is this the new Home Mini? Do you think that other companies are going to make this? Because it's cute, and I'll give it that. It's a very cute looking device, but I don't really understand why it exists in regards to why not just the price differentiation, $79 versus what's the Home Hub, $149?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't
yeah, but not really great. Because it's on sale all the time.
Especially yeah. that it's not that great a differentiation.
So especially the
Hub, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The thing I see about it is the Home Hub is you can use it anywhere. Like I have one in my bedroom and I love using it there.
Likewise.
But the reason the clock exists basically is what they were telling me is it's only designed for the bedroom. Like I said, I can't imagine it would not be useful as anything but a smart speaker in any other place in your house. But in the bedroom, it makes total sense. It's especially because I love the proactive alarm notifications it has. Like if you have a calendar event, like let's say you have to be somewhere at 9 a.m., it'll look at your alarm history and it'll say, okay, you don't have an alarm set, and it'll pull up a little notification to say you can set an alarm for this just by tapping it. So like stuff like that makes total sense for the bedroom. And I think it's $80. I don't think there's any reason to buy a Home Mini for the bedroom with this existing. And unless you do want to use it for other things in the bedroom, I don't really see a reason to buy a Home Hub for the bedroom in that case.
That's
where I think it fits in, is if you want a Google Assistant device in your bedroom, that's the one to buy. There's just nothing else to buy.
I think if we zoom out a little bit, it's really interesting to think about this new product category because, I mean, the Echo Spot kind of kicked this off. You know, it's not a super new thing. Funnily enough, I was calling it the Echo Dot for a few days, and Ben was really confused why I was comparing this to the Echo Dot. So, yeah, Amazon has terrible branding, if I can't get that right. but what's really interesting is that, you know, alarm clocks used to be a thing that, like, everyone had, that you just, like, everyone had an alarm clock by their bed, you know, and that, that was just, like, a thing, right? And I think in the last 10 years, that's kind of gone away, especially in our generation, you know, it's like, because people just use their phone for everything. Yeah, we don't have alarm clocks. If you need to check the time in the middle of the night, you just, like, lean over and you click the lock button or whatever, and you check the time. And so I think it's really interesting with, like, all these assistant-powered devices. We're going to see kind of the return, and it's kind of parallel in a way. It's funny to think about, you know, we're seeing the return of the watch with the smartwatch in our generation. You know, it's like we stopped using watches for 10 years too, because we just checked the time on our phone. And this is kind of the same thing. It's like we stopped using smart clocks alarm clocks for 10 years. And now, they've created Lenovo and Google have put together a smart alarm clock, and you know, suddenly it's attractive to people our age. So, I don't know. I want one. I want an alarm clock. Haven't said that in my whole life, but now I do.
Did you get any indication that that other companies are going to jump in and make their own smart clocks?
The only indication I can get from that at all is that the Google representative who was there for my briefing, he said that Google sees this as a new category. Like, I can't imagine they would have put all the time into making a brand new interface if they didn't see at least a couple of people doing this.
Definitely.
That's but even then, Lenovo kind of got it. It's exactly what it needs to be. The form factor and everything. Like, even the little thing they put into where you can tap it to snooze or turn off the clock.
Yeah, that's cute.
Like, I can't imagine this being someone else doing this more, like, better. Unless they just make it cheaper.
Hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I also wouldn't be too optimistic. Yeah, I wouldn't be optimistic about seeing any other devices anytime soon, because even with the smart displays, which were announced last year, it's like, you know, that was very clearly and very marketed as, like, this is a new platform, right? And we saw two devices last year, and then, or three devices last year, and the third one didn't even launch until, like,
this month, last month,
yesterday. and you know, we don't really know of many, many more that are on the way. And so, yeah, I mean, we'll probably see more of these little Echo Spot competitors. But you know, who knows from who, and who knows how long it'll take before they launch. Mm-hmm. I would bet we'll see one or two more by next year, by CES. This time next year, but who knows? All right, so that's that. Anything else in Google Assistant? We've kind of used up, like, almost half our time already. So anything else with, like, Google Assistant specific stuff that we should talk about?
Maybe the car stuff.
We could talk about car stuff. I mentioned Vuzix Blade at the top of the show, and I checked that out, and I honestly was very underwhelmed. If I'm just going to be completely frank, it's not a very usable product,
and the idea that they are selling it to consumers in the first place is also surprising.
Yeah, it's not a very consumer friendly product, I don't think, but they are very strongly positioning it as a consumer product. Mm-hmm. You can look it up and look into that if you want to. It's coming. Google Assistant's coming too. So that's the news for this week, is that Google Assistant's coming to the Vuzix Blade, which will be probably the closest thing, even though it's not, it's like the closest thing to a consumer facing AR device with Google Assistant built in since Google Glass, I think. Even though I guess Google Glass was not technically Google Assistant, or was it? I can't remember. Oh, no, I don't think it was branded as Google Assistant. Now. It was brand. I mean, it was still the same hot word that we're using today, but it wasn't yet.
Still voice search. Officially, still probably just voice search.
Officially, yeah. Cars. What happened in cars? We saw my favorite thing in cars. I'll just go out and say this. My favorite thing in cars is is we gave an award to Ticker slash Rove. Rove is like Anchor's sub brand that does car stuff. The Rove, what's it called? I'm trying to find it. The Bolt. Yeah, the Bolt. It's basically a little, I don't know, DC plug that you just plug into your cigarette lighter. I know we don't really call them cigarette lighters anymore, but you know what I'm talking about. Cigarette lighter in a car, and you suddenly you have a Google Assistant in your car. And that's pretty cool. I don't know. I mean,
I don't actually know how cigarette lighters work. Do you just put the cigarette in? I have no idea.
No. The way that used to work, you had a separate lighter part that you plugged in, and you would actually have to push it in, and it would come out, and it would be like a very hot coil, and you would light your cigarette using the coil. So you would, you don't stick your cigarette in the DC port.
I literally have no idea how that actually works. But yes, this new class of device is very interesting in the way that the whole Mini became a hit because it was super cheap. So the Anchors is $49 and the JBLs is $59. And it basically is an always assistant, always on microphone that acts as a bridge between your phone, the Google Assistant on your phone, and your car's audio system over Bluetooth or other aux port. So basically just routes everything to the better speakers in your car. It has these smart features like when you're saying a command, it'll quiet down the radio or whatever music is playing and that kind of stuff. And for people who don't like want to have like a mount, a phone mount, or like looking at displays when they're driving because it's distracting, this could be a killer new category for Google and everybody involved.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I remember seeing a story, I don't know, maybe a year ago now. It was the first time that someone talked about putting an Echo Spot and Echo Dot in their car and using their phone as like a hotspot and just using their Echo Dot in their car all the time. So I think, you know, that idea kind of sparked this whole category, and it makes sense. I mean, there's lots of times where, you know, there's a lot of people, I mean, you know, we have, if you have Android Auto, then you have this already, right? Because it's like the same, you know, a Google Assistant in the car is already a thing, right? But if you don't want to install a completely new infotainment system or whatever in your car, then, you know, this is a cheap little plug-in option. And Rove's products, we haven't been able to check this out yet, but in my experience so far, Rove's products are really great. Like, I have an old 2001 truck that I drive around, and I have a little Rove Bluetooth FM transmitter, and it like works flawlessly. And which is like, you know, Bluetooth transmitters traditionally are just like terrible, or FM transmitter, I should say. Rove's is just incredible in my opinion. So hopefully this thing will be nice too. And if you don't want to put an infotainment system in your car, this is a cheap way to get assistant always listening, no matter how old your car is. So
and the other way to do that is with the Hum.
Yeah, tell us about the Hum.
So Verizon, I think this was last year, the year before. It's a little thing you plug into that. I can't remember the name of that port in your car that lets you read all the functions.
Port or something like that.
Yeah. But it plugs into that, and then it has a little speaker that you hang from your visor. And it lets you just, you know, monitor your car, and you can ask for help if you get in an accident. But now they're going to add Google Assistant to it in two ways. The first is going to be the speaker. If you press the call button, it will let you talk to the assistant. And they told me like it'll pull, like you could ask it like where's the nearest gas station, and it'll respond based on the GPS inside of the adapter. And then it's also going to tie into the assistant, so you can go home and ask on your speaker, and you can ask like, you know, where's my car based on what the Hum says, and you can check the trip history and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's pretty cool. I mean, you have to pay like $15 a month for it, but
and that's where the Verizon pod comes in.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think they said it's $70 for the hardware, and then you pay $15 a month for the service.
Hmm. And being able to get status updates about your car seems like an interesting way to do it.
The thing I liked that they had mentioned was, like, if you can locate it, like, that might not be a bad thing for, like, a parent if they want to keep an eye on where their car, where their kids are with their car.
Hmm.
They gotta just ask, where's the car?
That's like, pretty clever. Yeah, that's like, pretty.
That's where I saw it. That's where I saw the functionality being useful, but it's pretty cool.
All right, so moving on, we also had some speaker and headphone news this week, also Google Assistant related. Google Assistant's finally arriving on the Sonos One and the Sonos Beam, which is, you know, kind of a minor story, I guess, this week. And JBL is launching 3 new Google Assistant equipped headphones this upcoming spring. Klipsch is debuting new smart soundbars with wireless speakers with Google Assistant built in. And also House of Marley, a brand that I didn't know until this week, and I feel like most people probably didn't know. Am I the only one that had never heard of this company?
I have a story about this. Okay, so the House of Marley brand is the headphones you get in every airport. Every airport has a House of Marley kiosk, and when you're desperate for headphones because your current USB-C pair not works with the one on the airplane seats because standards are dumb, you feel like a sucker, and you buy a 3.5mm headphones. That's my story. Very mad.
This is not just a description of a potential situation that some people face. It was a description of a situation that you've personally experienced firsthand.
Yes. There's kiosks everywhere. And I don't know if you're getting a good deal. You got me. And they got me.
Well, so, yeah. that brand that you have such warm and fuzzy feelings for, they announced a smart speaker this week.
Yes, an eco-conscious smart speaker, which is, honestly, it's cool. The idea of a battery-powered Google Chromecast built-in thing is not a bad idea. It has a 12-hour battery life, all over Bluetooth, 6 over Wi-Fi, and I think that's more things should have built-in batteries with them, so you can just take them around with you and do Google Assistant stuff.
And it's smaller than you think, too. I ran into them at Pepcom, and the speakers, it's a lot smaller than you think it is.
It's a foot. The mini, it's the Get Together Mini, it's called. And it's basically a foot, like 4 inches deep, 4 inches wide. And it's kind of cute.
Yeah, it's very, very nice in person.
Yeah, the materials, the bamboo, I think, and whatnot. So, yeah.
All right, so what about TVs? TVs. I guess we'll round it out with TVs. Android TV is kind of everywhere. This is not, I mean, kind of assistant related. Google Assistant and Android TV powered JBL Link Bar, is which we saw for the first time back at Google I.O., 2018. All my years are getting blurred together. It's finally shipping this upcoming spring. I almost forgot about it, which is, I feel like that's an annual thing. Every year at CES, it's like the tagline should be, "Oh, I almost forgot about that."
Ben, I think you're particularly excited about this new,
I love Android, this
new form factor. Yeah.
I love Android TV, and it's just a really cool form factor. Surprised it never existed before.
Yeah, a soundbar. The demo that Steven and I saw was pretty good. It was pretty loud, and we saw the first example of Android 9 Pie, I believe, at the time, and it should be shipping this spring, $400. And JBL is a good audio brand, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this Link Bar is the first example of an external Android TV device that does like HDMI pass-through. So that's kind of an interesting thing where it's like you can be watching something through, you know, one of the inputs on the back of the JBL Link Bar and pull up the Android TV menu. And just like already happens on many Android TVs, like standalone Android TVs that have Android TV built in, you can kind of watch stuff in the background that's plugged in via the JBL Link Bar and just click through the menu with that stuff playing behind the menu, which is not currently possible with, you know, the external Android TV boxes that you can buy, like the NVIDIA Shield or whatever.
So, I think one trend we're seeing, is how there weren't as many smart, there wasn't as many like classical smart speakers to call it. But instead, we're getting existing form factors with always on microphones built into them. And I think that's a smarter, more efficient way of doing things, of adding voice to your product.
Yeah, and I ranted, I think I talked about this last week, but I'm really hoping that these devices are popping up and everyone has so many more of these devices that are always listening in their homes that aren't, you know, there are some of them are third party, some of them are first party. And I'm just hoping that they'll start to work better together and be smarter about how, which ones react to your voice and which ones don't. And like I said, I could go on and on and on about this, but yeah, it's a flaw and it's unfortunately getting worse the more devices launch. I mean, even in my case, like Nest Cam IQ, you can make it a Google Assistant always listening, device. And it's, for some reason, I don't know why, but it just isn't good about knowing that I'm talking to the device that's not it.
This is a total tangent, but I remember the time that Gizmodo got banned from CES because they had this remote switcher. It's like universal remote that could turn off all the TVs.
I don't remember that, but
They got banned for it because they just like went around and started turning off people's like display TVs. Anyways, the point is, it would be kind of funny if like one person could say "Okay, Google" very loud in the convention hall and have everything turn on at the same time. Just a thought.
That would be pretty amazing, actually.
Oh, that'd be so loud if people. Mm-hmm. Because some people would forget to mute their demo devices.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a spectacle.
So of the rest of these Android TV stories, what stands out to you, Ben, as particularly interesting as the Android TV fan?
I mean, Android TV, there was just the thing that for me is just it's everywhere now. Mm-hmm. And it's available at like every point. Like Philips, they had the ones that were starting at $349, which I thought was very cool that they had the microphones built in, so you can have always listening assistant. Which I don't think anyone else has done that yet, which I thought that was cool. I saw Hisense; they have new Android TVs, and they start at like $170. Like you can now get a 1080p small TV that has Android TV built in. That's awesome. So it's everywhere now, and I love seeing that.
So a report came out late today that Google is interested in building Android, enforcing minimum hardware requirements for the Android TV form factor. But I think the more interesting thing that came out of it is Google's head of Android TV said something along the lines of, this platform now has critical scale, and that we can start asking app developers to build stuff. So, and I'm curious what that looks like, because Android TV apps don't work as evident by Apple TV. You guys have any ideas of what apps you want to see?
So in my mind, the main thing I want to see, because realistically on Android TV, most major things are available with the exception of Prime Video because Amazon. But in my mind, what I see this being a good thing of is it's going to make people like Hulu, who hasn't updated its Android TV app in like a year, it's going to make them actually keep up with it. Because like if you've used Hulu on other platforms, you know, it's got a new interface with profiles and all that stuff. And there's no sign that that's coming to Android TV anytime soon. So if it's bigger and they're pushing it harder and Google's saying, hey, you need to do this because there's a lot of people, maybe they'll actually do stuff like that.
Oh, that could get really exciting.
Yeah, that's what I see as being the benefit. Because, I mean, there's a ton of games because it's Android. There's a lot of apps because it's Android. I mean, yeah, we might start seeing some more of the stuff that's like only on Roku. But that's what I'm excited about, is just updates.
Yeah, so I think in terms of TV news, wasn't That was, it was everywhere, but that Google didn't make any platform use to Android TV. Well, Fishery. So it'll be interesting to see when that happens. I think wrapping that, I think that's an end to our assistant section, and maybe we should run down some other Chrome OS and watch news from CES. So the big Chrome OS news was AMD with announcing their first Chromebook chips with Acer and HP. Have you had the chance to play with those?
I ran into the HP one at PepCon. Mm. It is, I mean, it seemed snappy enough. I mean, I only played with it for like a minute, but it seems as snappy as like a Celeron.
Mm-hmm.
My only complaint is that HP's AMD Chromebook is one of those ones with like the, I think it's a TN display.
Oh,
where when you do the viewing angles, it turns negative colors.
Oh, that's really bad. Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrible. It was a touchscreen without glass, though, which is interesting.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, that was weird. But, I mean, yeah, it seems like it's, what I saw, it was as good as a Celeron.
Hmm. But, of course, the real show was from Asus with the Chromebook Flip, which... we gave CS awards, I believe, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, I have not gotten a chance to see it in person, though, because they have a, I think they have a private suite somewhere, and I haven't had a chance to make an appointment there.
Mm. And second, the second premium enterprise thing we saw was from HP, which is... It's good for this, the mid-range. We all want premium mid-range non-plasticky Chromebooks, and it's always good to have to get more and more.
Yeah, but that one, yeah, that one's nice too. I got to see that.
Ooh, is odd question. Did you see? Is the base still made of plastic?
Wow, I don't remember. I mean, I picked it up. I think it was aluminum.
Oh, that's so much better. Because HP has this...
I think it is.
This unfortunate trend of making these beautiful metal Chromebooks, but the base is made from this plastic material, which is probably for heat issues or whatnot. But yeah, it's a nice-looking Chromebook.
Yeah, I can't say for sure, but I think it was metal.
And I think, I guess, wrapping the last quality is watches. Did you see any good watches?
Well, I got to play with the new Tick watches a few hours ago. They feel super cheap.
Hmm.
Like, they feel like you cannot feel more plastic than this. That's the best way I can put it. But they're supposed to be very cheap. They're a lot snappier than the originals because they switched from MediaTek to Qualcomm. The batteries are much bigger. Yeah, but they're going to be cheap.
It's an improvement. Yeah, it's an improvement.
Yeah, it's a major improvement for the price.
Okay, sorry, guys. I just ordered my Google Home Hub.
What are you doing?
I was wondering what was going on.
I just wanted to make sure I got in before the flood of orders.
They have.
I mean, literally hundreds of people are getting that code right now. And so.
Yeah,
I got to get that in. But hold on. Before we talk about watches, I want to talk about Chromebooks a little bit more because I got a chance, or Brent and I both got a chance to go
head to
the Bridge today. And yeah, they, as you may remember, back, I think like, a month to 3 months ago, we leaked we found that they accidentally showed off the keyboard for what we now know is the Pixel Slate, which... they call Wallaby, codename Wallaby. They also had another keyboard that we saw that day, which was kind of a desktop-looking keyboard, which we were like, we had no idea what that was. But kind of given that the Pixel Slate was being positioned as a desktop or desktop kind of focused device as well as being a tablet, at least they were very adamant about, you can plug this into an HDMI and it'll push like 4K monitors or whatever. I suspected at least that the keyboard we saw leaked was pretty much probably inspired or influenced by that, which Bridge did confirm to us today that part of the reason that Gowanna keyboard, the desktop keyboard that they announced yesterday or today, whatever. They said that that was partly inspired by the fact that the Pixel Slate is kind of intended, or Google hopes that people will use it as a desktop experience. Not solely, but also, you know, they kind of also mentioned that, you know, this kind of product just doesn't exist in Chrome OS. Like a really nice premium keyboard that's made specifically for Chrome OS desktops / you know, using tablets as desktops, just doesn't exist. And so they announced that yesterday, and they announced this new Force Touch trackpad, which is, I'm just going to call it a Force Touch trackpad because that is literally what it is. It doesn't have any tactile feedback, so it's just going to be, you know, it detects pressure and it'll give you haptic feedback. And so they had what, you know, they said they were like EVT or whatever demo or prototypes showing off on the show floor today. We got a chance to check both of those things out. I am actually in the process of writing my hands on with those kind of right now as we speak, and I'll publish that later tonight probably. So stay tuned for that. Any questions or thoughts on those things from either of you guys? I mean, I know you, Ben, got a chance to check them out too. Anything I'm not mentioning that?
Not about those.
It is scary how much it looks like an Apple Magic keyboard. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very surprising.
Yeah, it looks exactly like a Magic keyboard. And the Force Touch trackpad looks exactly like a smaller version of the Magic trackpad.
USB-C is a great addition to that.
Yeah, actually, that's an interesting thing we can talk about. We asked them about that. So the USB-C port on the back of the keyboard will automatically, you know, you can plug it into any Chrome OS tablet, desktop, or laptop, and it will, you know, you'll be able to use that keyboard wired through the USB-C port. And I asked them, you know, we've been using Wallaby, the Pixel Slate keyboard from Bridge, for a while, and it also has a USB-C port on the side. And so I said, why didn't you make it so that USB-C port could also be the action on that to the Pixel Slate itself? You know, and I thought, like, it would be really cool if they had worked with Google to make it so that if you plug the two together, then it automatically paired. I feel like that would have been just like a really cool, like, seamless way. It might have, and maybe even solved some of the Bluetooth problems. I don't know.
Because
that's a lot of the problems that people were having was getting the thing to pair. And I was like, well, if you just plug it in with a cord, then maybe that would not be a problem. But yeah, they said that no, it doesn't work the same way. Although they did say that the internals for how these keyboards actually work, they did have to work with Google to make this work, because they mentioned that most Bluetooth keyboard accessories do all of the processing of the input on the keyboard hardware itself and then send that over Bluetooth to the OS. But in the case of the Pixel Slate keyboard, not the Pixel Slate keyboard, the Bridge G-Type, I'm sorry for botching that, the G-Type keyboard, and now in the case of the new desktop keyboard and the Force Touch trackpad thing. And honestly, they don't have real names for these products, so they can't blame me for not using the Apple products.
Sounds cooler, honestly.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah. So they had to work with Google on this to make it work, because the processing of the input is actually happening on Chrome OS itself, not the keyboard. Hmm. And so that's why we saw commits on, you know, the Chromium repository. That's why it leaked, because they were, you know, Google was having them to make these work and to be, and particularly the assistant button or the assistant key is part of that too. So
any of you ever use that button? I've never used that button.
Never used it. Not once.
I have used it two or three times to control to turn off a light and to pause media on my TV.
Yeah, that works. What?
I do use the home button key, the one that's in the place of the caps lock. I use that pretty often though.
Yes, searching, very useful.
Yeah. So anyway, that's Chromebooks, and now let's move on to watches. You kind of already mentioned these very, very low quality
No, I'm not going to say low quality. They feel cheap, but they are
I'll built say low quality. Well. I have no shame.
No, they are. They feel cheap, but they are built well. I know those two don't usually go together, but in this case, they do.
Fasting. You can be unapologetic. What is that stupid quote, Mives? Unapologetic fasting. Okay. Yeah. So was it that?
It's not glossy. It's not glossy. It's a matte. It's matte all the way through. I really don't know like what to compare it to.
Okay, so how about the last generation, like with the clear plastic bodies that some of them.
Okay,
have.
So cool. I never felt the TicWatch S, the original, the E. The E looked more premium than it felt. Right now, I think the second generation, it looks as cheap as it feels. But it is, it's built well. It's part of it is just that they are super, super lightweight.
Yeah.
Like almost to a flaw, which That's doesn't a make sense.
Big difference.
Yeah. Which it doesn't really make sense because they have so much bigger batteries inside. Like they're both like 30% bigger, which they said should last people 2 days.
Okay. That's
in the current state. Like I think update H is supposed to do something with that, which I think we're going to get to at some point. But yeah, that's hardware wise. They're nothing super special, but they're supposed to be very cheap, which is nice.
Yeah. When it gets cheap enough, Wear OS becomes fine.
Yeah. And okay. So like the first generation, they were both under 200. The E was like 160. Obviously it's not announced, so he couldn't say like, yes, they're going to be cheaper, but it was very strongly hinted to me that they are both going to be a little cheaper, especially in the case of the S.
Okay. That's very something like that. That's one way to force Wear OS's success.
Yeah. And what was nice is they built a lot of software on top of Wear OS.
One of the few companies that does that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I'm putting together a hands-on in the morning with them, but basically what they did is they built in activity. So instead of you having to go in and start a workout for it to track, it'll automatically detect that, oh, he's walking, oh, he's running, oh, he's swimming, and it'll automatically start that workout, which I think I know the Galaxy Watch does it. Does the Apple Watch do that?
Yes, it does.
Okay,
so that's a bit sad.
And it'll only work with their app for now.
Take help,
They didn't rule out Google Fit. Like I asked them about that. They didn't rule it out, but they also didn't say yes, that's gonna happen or no, it's
And the thing
it's also gonna do they're also gonna add fall detection at some point.
Well, that's a good thing about Apple pushing all these companies along. I'm just going to take 5 seconds to yell at Google that they could be doing so much more in health, but they haven't yet. So please do, because you have so much data that you could be doing something very, very cool with subpar hardware, but smart AI stuff. So 5 seconds up.
Yeah. And
I wish I could, I had a script of everything you just said so I could just say it all again. Like maybe I'll just like transcribe that after the show and I'll just say it next show. And just say it the exact same words, because that was really good. I mean, you could write a book just based on that thesis alone, Abner.
Freestyling. I need to be what I honestly forgot that I said. So
yeah,
I think that's a sign that we might want to wrap up, unless
So let's wrap up on this last final note. This has been a controversial thing, but I really feel like Android phones in the last 5 years. 4 years ago, we came to this show, and honestly, the biggest topics to talk about were like a new Asus. I know 4 years ago, they announced the Asus Zenfone 2, I think.
Was it the one that slid in?
What? It was the one that had Intel. It was the first or one of those early Intel Android phones. And then they also did like a cheap version, like a 2E or something for AT&T or something. I don't know. What I'm saying is Android phones were kind of the most important thing for us to be covering here 4 years ago and, three years ago. And it seems like the last 2 years, it's now like the most non thing to cover. Ben and I both went to the Honor View 20 event, which, you know, not much new to see there, but, you know, it's kind of, you know, underwhelming. You know, there was the what other devices? The Nubia Red Magic Mars, which has these weird like gaming buttons on it, and you know, it's kind of affordable and has a really interesting kind of light strip thing on the back, which reminds me of like a Razer keyboard. And then there was like Huawei MediaPad M5 Lite Android tablet, which is like a weird phrase. The two words Android and tablet being put together is kind of a rare occurrence these days. But yeah, phones, Android phones and stuff was just like a non-thing this year.
Honestly, it's such a non-thing that one of the big phone makers could just come back and use... They could own CES if they wanted to with a major phone announcement in terms of phone announcement.
Oh, definitely.
Like, yeah, I mean, we're at that point right now.
Yeah, it wasn't even that long ago. What, 3 or 4 years ago that the LG G Flex was, you know, that was a... It was a It was a pretty notable thing at CES. It was like, it was probably, I mean, both those years, I think there was 2 years where they did a G Flex phone at CES. I think both of those years, that phone was in like, even though it was definitely LG's like second tier, third tier phone or whatever, like it was still in the top five things to talk about that week, you know? Mm-hmm. And this week there's just nothing. And It's cool in a sense, because for us, we really like covering the Google Assistant stuff and the wider ecosystem that Google's pushing nowadays. But, you know, man, I feel bad for all the Android blogs because there's nothing to see here.
Mm. Yeah, like as a point of comparison, speaking of LG, 5 years ago, Flex, this week they announced a $450 LG Q9 or something that has a Snapdragon 21 in it.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, so like I said, there's nothing to see here. And so, yeah, I mean, what else? Is there anything we should talk about before we just like wrap up the show? Anything, any final notes? I mean, like it kind of started and ended in the same thing. This is the Google Assistant convention now. Mm-hmm. And it's even more obvious by the fact that there's no Android phones to see. I'm excited to get my free Google Home Hub. If you're at CES and watching the show, definitely go ride the roller coaster, because it's like a 20-minute wait and you get a $100 Google Home Hub and a free macaroon. And, ooh. I mean,
I'd have been there if you told me there's a macaroon.
Who needs a Google Home Hub? I've got like 10 of those. But a free macaroon, I'm sold. Yeah, I was hoping that we could have done this podcast at the Google space. Maybe next year I'll think ahead to ask the PR team if we can have like a room for.
They would broadcast us. because
somebody did actually.
There were a couple podcasts that did that were out of the. I know The Verge did one from the Google space. But yeah, and that's CES 2019. The assistant convention. Any final thoughts before we wrap it up? It's about an hour now.
I don't have anything. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Likewise.
Awesome. Well, until next week, we will have probably nothing to talk about because all the news is dropping this week and last week. You know, all the CES announcements came early this year. Until next week, you tune in to Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Wednesday and publish roughly Wednesday evening, Thursday morning. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, which as of this week is now compatible with Android Auto, right?
Yes.
I always like to throw in the little Google Podcast developments at the end. Google Play. Google Play is still alive, so you can check us out there too. And you can also listen directly over at 9to5google.com. Thanks for tuning in as always, and thanks to Abner and this week, Ben. For joining me, and we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Peace out.